For several years, the debate about whether robo-advice would replace face-to-face advice has rumbled on. Well, over the past 18 months, advisors have found themselves unable to offer face-to-face advice, and many robo-advisors have found the market for their services wasn't as big as perhaps they thought, and they've retreated from the market. So what does the future of advice look like? Well, M&G Wealth believes the answer is hybrid advice, and this week we're going to find out a little bit about what that means. I'm David Fantato, digital editor of FT Advisor. With me this week is Richard Caldicott, deputy chief executive of M&G Wealth Advice, Terry Donohoe, European chief executive of Ignition, the company that M&G Wealth are working with on their hybrid advice proposition, and Sam Turner, a consultant at Altus Consulting, who has recently written a white paper on the issue of hybrid advice. Hello, everybody.
Morning, Dave.
Hi, Damien.
Good morning.
Hello. So, Sam, we'll start with you, if I may, just to sort of set the scene. As I mentioned in my intro, the number of robo-advisors in the UK market has shrunk. Some of them have left the market completely. Some of them have been snapped up. What sort of went wrong with robo-advice, and why have so many purely digital services struggled?
Yeah, it's a good question. So things have gone wrong, but a lot of things have gone right. I think when we look at some of these businesses, it's easy to assume that robo-advice 1.0 has been a spectacular failure, but some of these businesses have amassed billions of pounds in assets under management and have helped thousands of people make more informed decisions about their finances. So on the one hand, a lot of stuff's been done very well. If we look at it from a commercial and a profitability perspective, then yeah, it's a struggle. There's no getting away from the fact that the numbers are difficult to stack up. You're looking at small pots, a relatively small charge being taken on those pots. I think we did some research that looked at where you have a lack of brand awareness amongst the robo-advice community. It can take up to £500 to recruit a new customer. And if you're looking at a 25 bips charge on a 20K pot, which isn't untypical, you're looking at £50 a year revenue, 10 years to recoup the costs of winning that customer. And that doesn't consider continued innovation and maintenance of the software and all that stuff. So the numbers are very difficult to get them to work. I also think that there's been perhaps a propositional failure. I think some of the early iterations of robo-advice solutions were nothing more than thinly veiled investment sales journeys. They were, let's identify your risk appetite and align that with a portfolio or a multi-asset fund. I don't think they necessarily considered the real goal of the investor in saving. For instance, a lot of ISA savers in the UK will look to save for a deposit on the first home. Engagement literature and material doesn't necessarily focus in on what are interest rates doing, what impact is that having on the housing market, how close are you to your goal. So I think the breadth of advice journey was limited, but I know that a lot of good stuff's being done, particularly in the and in retirement space, and especially the work that Terry and Richard are doing, speaks to a real evolution across the sort of breadth of advice process that we're now looking at.
Mm. Richard, as someone who's in the business of providing advice, what's your analysis of why the pure digital player has struggled?
So I think what went wrong, well, if you're Nutmeg, if you've been sold for £700 million in the last few weeks, so I'm not sure they would see much going wrong with that.
Probably not, that's true.
It's all relative, isn't it? M&G have assessed looking at pure digital plays for the last 5 years or so. I've had various attempts or thoughts about whether we want to do something in this space. And the truth is, we've been inspired by sort of pioneers who've tried to do this. Going right back to the LV and Wealth Wizards a number of years ago. There's some really clever stuff back then. And through to companies like Open Money, Destination Retirement, Ticker, doing great things in the market. So there's lots of good things happening that certainly have inspired me over the years to want to push this a bit harder. But as Sam called out, looking at it for us internally, it's a pretty difficult business case. The numbers don't really or haven't really stacked yet for a pure robo play for us. Because you're talking about that acquisition cost, offset against a fairly small revenue income, it's quite difficult to see a scale and a rate of return that satisfies shareholders. So we've not been in that market yet. However, we do think that if you can serve a real customer need, one that we know we have, and as technology costs reduce, there's definitely an opportunity to build a scalable offer. But, and we've often seen that for clients, particularly the more complex need like retirement, the requirement of a human being in the process is still, you know, really fundamental. And the tech can deliver some of the outcomes of the advice need, but what it can't do is reassure, educate and support the customer in a way that we think is critical, particularly at retirement. And I think that, for me, is the most important thing about this next evolution. It does change the proposition quite a bit, but it's a pretty important change to make, we think.
Sure. And I suppose that segues us nicely into your proposition, what you guys are doing at M&G Wealth. You guys are sort of expanding into the advice market, and one of the ways that you're going to be doing that with that is through hybrid advice. Tell me a bit about what that means. Doesn't hybrid advice just mean replacing, you know, face-to-face conversations with phone calls or Zoom meetings? Isn't that something that a lot of advisors have been doing?
Yeah, so I want to start by saying that we fundamentally believe in advice. And for many of our clients, that will be holistic financial planning, delivered either by us or by our many fantastic external advisor partners. And we don't see that changing. We see that market will continue to thrive and be really important to support. But there are a whole bunch of clients in the UK who don't get financial advice and they can't afford to get financial advice. They don't have the means for it, or perhaps the need for full holistic planning. And we see that within our business, and we need to try and help close that advice gap. And we've used the term hybrid in our business for the last 18 months internally. It's only an internal term, by the way. We won't use it with customers. To talk about the power of combining great tech, digital tech, robotech, if you will, with human advisors. And that's what we mean by hybrid, doing it aggressively. For the advisors that we work with today, both ones in our network and externally, the first steps in that hybrid journey, that digital journey, most naturally and obviously, are using video technology and eSEG and things like that. And they make great sense. And COVID really has made that much, much more prevalent. And we certainly saw in our business, our advisors were a bit reluctant at the start, to be honest, to use video capability. But a year and a half down the line, recognised they'll use it 3/4 of the time. But if we really want to close the advice gap and really serve the underserved customer with more modest wealth in the UK, we've got to do this much, much more aggressively, go much further and much faster. There's a great survey by Next Wealth. I use this all the time, right? Where they say that for the average advice business in the UK, it's about half an FTE of manpower a week to onboard a new client. And that then creates cost and complexity and time and effort that makes advice expensive. And so we've got to do our best to try and tackle that. And when we talk about hybrid, there's two things I think about. One is the user experience, the client experience. And the second is the integrations. And getting those really slick and really deep will make the whole process much more efficient. So there's various things we can do beyond video, beyond the signature. So for example, making the triage really slick and clever, making the fact finding really intuitive, really easy to understand, giving the client a chance to assess the attitude to risk with the advisor digitally in a very gamified and engaging way, giving the advisor clear recommendations with which they can advise the customer on, and making it easy to modify those recommendations automatically when the client reveals more information about themselves that helps create a different output. And all that automation, all the way through from start to end, can really take out some of the hours spent, or not client-facing hours, but add cost and complexity into the experience for the customer. And that's where I think you can begin to lower the cost of advice for clients. And that's what we talk about as hybrid, but at the core of it is the human being. And that's a really important thing for me.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And Terry, from Ignition's point of view, you're the company that's working with M&G Wealth on this proposition. What does hybrid advice mean for you guys?
It's exactly as Richard has so eloquently articulated there. It is end-to-end. It is not part of it. It is not a Zoom call. It is the user experience. When we talk about that, it's customers and advisors. It's everybody in the mix. You need to create the consistency of experience and close support that strengthens your conduct risks and challenges like that that people don't typically think about. For the likes of Richard and institutions in the background, it is true efficiency. How do you bring those efficiencies to bear? And that's not a simple task. And it involves a large level of orchestration in the background to bring many disparate systems together to actually provide that experience. So it's not a very simple add Zoom experience and that creates digital. And that's a very short extension of what advice is today. It's doing it over video as opposed to doing it face to face. So it is that entire experience.
I think it's very easy to sort of point out the use of Zoom and e-signatures as unremarkable from a sort of tech perspective. But I think what's come with that over the last year or so carries some significant benefits. I think there's two main ones. Richard alluded to operational efficiency of the advice firm. I've spoken to advisors who have increased their productivity there from having two advice meetings a day, where they're up and down the M4 or what it might be, to having six or seven. And so productivity has just increased remarkably. But I think they're also on a sort of broader advice community level. It's enforced an attitudinal change around the use of technology in their business. I think previously wealth managers and financial planners were protective over the coaching and the interpersonal stuff that they'll do with their clients, and rightly so, because that's what they're very good at. But I think they've now awoken to the benefits of technology within their business, and the tech's been there for some time. I think there has been a reluctance to use that, and I think that's now changing. So what we might see is this use of Zoom and the use of e-signatures acting as the catalyst for fundamental change in how advice is delivered in the UK. Because as I say, the tech's there. As open finance, open banking solutions become more sophisticated, as Richard said, if we can get the fact finds sort of more seamlessly completed, if you can begin to gamify some of the education and engagement, I think you see the role of technology as being one of enriching the human-led financial advice process rather than replacing it as we might have envisaged previously.
I think one of the things I was reflecting on, Sam, is that we talk about hybrid in our business today. Life is a separate channel. And it probably will be when we start things off. But in truth, I think it's a sort of spectrum. I suspect over time, more and more of the stuff we're doing in this separate sort of pilot channel will begin to become commonplace technology for advisors. Because what it's not doing is remotely replacing the job of the advisor. It's replacing all the bits that add time and complexity to the advisor's workload that take, I don't know, 6 hours or 9 hours to give financial advice out of the process. And why wouldn't we just gradually make those things more and more mainstream as the tech gets better and better? The thing about the last year and a half that's interesting though as well is the client's behaviour has changed. So particularly at retirement, where you're serving clients in their 60s very often, I think we've seen a much more acceptance of video and digital over the last year and a half than we saw a year and a half ago. And we were concerned our clients wouldn't want to interact with us by video. But of course, they've begun to do that through their whole life, whether it be with their grandkids or whatever it happens to be. And so video has become the norm, right? And clearly, booming online shopping has become the norm, etc. And they're all concepts that were always going to become more and more mainstream, but have massively accelerated through the last year and a half. And, you know, it's been a horrendous year and a half, but these little things are things we can build upon to accelerate that advice experience, whether that be holistically or whether that be through a more simplified approach that we're taking in the hybrid journeys we're building for our clients and our mother's wealth at M&G.
And Terry, for many people, digital advice is associated with, you know, standardized processes, the use of algorithms, for example. But that often relies on cases which look like each other. But advice can sometimes be highly personal. So when you get into the business of actually providing something like hybrid advice, digital advice, how do you square that circle?
I think this predominantly reaches back into Sam's original comments around the propositional misalignment, perhaps that where Robo probably just didn't tick the box. And what we know is most people's understanding and knowledge is pretty low across these subjects, and that leads to probably a lack of trust in the underlying assumptions and skepticism around the likes of algorithms. In Robo, it's got to be quite tight because it's driving streamlined outcomes, so it's fair to actually have that skepticism in place. But Robo does what it says on the tin. When we go to broader hybrid advice, like Richard has spoken to, really it is about the inputs. So if each of the four of us put inputs into the fact gathering, the algorithm should drive unique outputs for each of us. It's critical then for the proposition to step above that and bring the advisor into the mix to provide that confidence around the assumptions and that are there. So it's the tools that you give the advisors that are going to help join the dots for the users of the actual solutions in place at that point in time. And that's what will provide confidence around the algorithms and assumptions that underlie propositions like this.
Mm-hmm. I spent time last year with Sam looking at various providers all across the marketplace, all across the globe actually, to help build our proposition. And I met lots of providers of technology. My observation would be that the problem's not algorithms, right? It is very, very, they're very capable of quite considerable complexity and personalization. And there are many companies who've done some great work in this space, right? The reality, though, is advice isn't binary. It doesn't only have one possible outcome for the client. There are different ways, perhaps, to best serve the client need. And that's where you come back for me to hybrid. So when a client puts in their information and we gather their situation and what they want to try and do, then I think it's important that we then have that client conversation to challenge and to validate what they've put in, to make sure they understand what they want. When they might not have thought the thing through the way they should have done or the way they want to do with some challenge, then where the system really helps us is making that modification process really slick and easy so that actually when you modify the advice or modify the inputs, it still creates a very slick and automated experience in the administration after that. So it's not about creating an algorithm that gives a one-size-fits-all answer and is then rolled out and rolled through. The advisor still will challenge and validate. It's just important that process doesn't create a whole bunch more hours of work to create a different outcome. And that's certainly what, you know, the work Kerry's built for me is really helping me do. It's that conversation and that validation will lead me to quite a quick process to change the recommendation to the right recommendation for the client. But actually for me, the algorithms are still fundamental. Where's the gap, Damien, though? I was going to say, where's the gap, Damien, for me, is that most of these technology solutions don't yet deal with holistic planning. So they don't deal with trading off a set of complex needs a client has. They're very, very good at taking a single need a client has and building a very complex and thought-through journey to help deal with that simple need. And so I think as they evolve, and as I'm sure Terry evolves his business, that becomes more and more of a challenge to create the ability to trade off different holistic planning needs rather than simply that streamlined need. Mm. And that's where I think we'll see the business, the market evolve in the future.
And on that point, very quickly, a lot of the services that I speak to advice firms about, it focuses very much on the investment side of things. When you mentioned the holistic side of things, does that mean that M&G's hybrid advice is going to cover things like, you know, protection or you know, mortgages maybe?
So our ambition, Damien, is to cover a range of different services. But I think where it's still a bit limited technologically is you know, it's easy for us with Terry's support to build journeys that cover all those different needs, right? So whether that be decumulation, accumulation, investment, protection, they're all there to get built out and developed. What is still, I think, just beyond the reach of us is the combination of those things where you're beginning to say to a customer, well, actually, we think you should do this rather than that. You want to do investment accumulation, but you should do protection instead. And that kind of combination of discussions is still just a bit beyond, I think, the reach of some of the technology. But we'll get there. Mm-hmm. But certainly for us, we're going to start with retirement because you've got a customer need there. And that's, for me, the best place to start, right? And then we'll build out other services.
That's a really great point, I think, Richard, in terms of when we look at Richard's proposition, you have to have all of those services in behind. So you have to have all of those advice journeys in behind before you can actually pull that financial assessment together to create and drive the next best action. So what should a client do? They may want to come in and invest, but perhaps, like Richard said, it might be insurance, the actual need that they have at that point of time. And when you look at the challenges of implementing solutions like this, if you take that approach and you say, well, we want to put that holistic advice piece in place first, you have this really intensive implementation program that has to put everything in place before you can go out the door and start utilizing the actual tool sets that you have. So it takes time to actually put the end solution or proposition in place to get it to that point in time. Our experience typically is with other clients is it can take two and a half years to get to that point before you can actually get the likes of true financial assessment in place that can drive those next best actions. But that is that's where this has to move to, and we're well down the path.
Yeah, I think that there are, just going back to the use of an algorithm within the advice business, there are a number of benefits to defining those rules. What we've seen when we've looked at digital advice or hybrid advice with our advice clients, it's been, okay, there's a blank sheet of paper, write down your advice rules, write down how your firm would act given a certain scenario. And frankly, they're unable to do it. And it identifies a wide variance in the way that advice is delivered across the firm. So being confronted with that challenge, being asked to define those advice rules, which will simply act as the guide rails rather than sort of delivering the solution, they'll act as the guide rails and it'll be supplemented with the coaching and with the financial planning that the individual will provide. It allows the firm to define its ethos, to define its culture, and it also carries with it a number of quality assurance and compliance benefits. You can govern the algorithm, you can case check almost every single case, or you can just pull out those where the advisor has changed the recommendation produced by the rules engine. So there's a lot to be said for the use of an algorithm within an advice business.
Mm-hmm. And Richard, we've touched on this already, but what impact do you see this will have on the fees and charges that M&G Wealth levies, the type of client that M&G Wealth levies, because this is the thing that the FCA is keen on innovation in advice doing. It wants to fill the advice gap.
So we start with our purpose, right? So the M&G Wealth advice purpose is to become the most accessible and inclusive advice business we can possibly become. And that really talks to the advice gap. But we start with segmentation. There are many, many clients for whom the current advice process and service is the right one, be that through ourselves or through advisors all over the UK, right? And they want and they can afford and they need holistic financial planning. And that will always be the case. And hopefully we can make them, those advisors, be them working with us or externally, more efficient and with more tools and help. But the truth is, you know, we want to try and help close that advice gap. Now, how we actually price the service, we're still working through, Damien. We're still testing out various models and various ideas. But the reality is, by making something hybrid, you've put a human advisor at its heart. And our challenge is that's got a cost. It's got a real cost that we absolutely should explicitly and wholly pass back to the customer, right? And that's how we're going to price this service. And we're going to add on the cost of technology, which is, you know, reducing quite materially, and the cost of running an advice business. So we'll end up with a price point somewhere between digital services, which are often cheap or free, and the cost of holistic planning today. What I can say for certainty is that, you know, we expect what we're building to materially cut the time it takes to give advice. And all of that efficiency will flow back into the customer charge and become quite materially lower, we expect, by the end state. What we're still debating is how we charge them. Do we charge them a percentage of their assets, as is normal in the market? Do we charge them a fixed fee? Do we charge them a subscription model? And there are various pros and cons, and, you know, we're still working them through. We'll test them with clients, I suspect, over the course of our pilot period. Certainly today, it's typically possible and likely that we can advise clients with about 100 grand of investable assets. But once you get into more modest wealth, it's quite difficult. A lot of our clients at retirement have got less than £50,000 in their pension pot. So we've absolutely got to be in that space. Where I think we've got a sort of further debate is just quite how low can you afford to go? How far down that chain can you go and still keep a human being in the process and add value and make it value for money? And that's still where, you know, I think we'll find as we go through our pilot period how efficient we can make the service and quite where that balance is. We've got to get ourselves below that sort of £50,000 of investable assets, probably down to at least £30,000, I think. But that's one that will evolve and work through as we start to test out with clients the journey.
Mm-hmm. I think we expect to see a change in the model. I think where you've had a human financial planner and they're taking a 0.5 ongoing and offering an annual review, I suspect that the younger generation of investor are unlikely to tolerate that model. I think they're going to have specific advice needs at a point in time. It might be a house purchase. It might be buying a second property to let out. There are certain tax implications of that. They'll expect to consume the advice that they're paying for as and when they need it. And that attitudinal change, as Richard mentioned earlier, towards an acceptance of video calling and a move towards an acceptance of advice delivered by an algorithm, that all supports that model. And that's sort of where we see direction of travel as far as the model as a whole is concerned.
We've not got very far yet or far enough yet in our thinking about how we support that customer once the plan's established in year 2, 3, and 4. We're working on that at the moment with Terry and fleshing that out. But there's clearly a whole bunch of things you can do digitally to support the customer. So if a customer's got, for example, a plan to draw down income over a period of time, and that plan, you know, demonstrates that they might expect that to run down over until their mid-80s, let's say, or whatever date we advise on, then showing the variability in that, either because the markets perform differently or because they take more income out, and how that affects them and what that means for their plan, is something you can do quite cheaply and easily digitally on an ongoing basis. But we think it's got real value to the client. How you charge for that in a way that is reflective of the value is quite important. And that's the next sort of evolution in our thinking. We've got a really clear view of how we deliver that initial advice, and that's, you know, in build and developed. But the opportunity, I think, for clients to get a great outcome comes if we can find a slick way to deliver that ongoing support through their retirement or through their investment journey or whatever it happens to be. So that in fact they're never far from advice. It's never a once a year, I'll check in with you and do a physical review. It's a much more live experience. And that, I think, is very possible with technology and therefore very cheap to deliver. And you can intervene physically when the situation demands that intervention because something's happened that requires something to be physical rather than digital.
And Terry, Ignition is an Australian company launched in the UK 2 months ago, I think. And M&G Wealth is one of your first clients in the UK. What's your aim for your presence in the UK? Do you see yourselves working with more companies like M&G or some of the smaller, the proliferation of smaller advice firms that there are in the market?
So if taken in order of priority, the first priority is to do a great job for Richard so that Richard speaks highly of us to other prospective clients. We are primarily aimed at large institutions looking at plugging the advice gap and helping them solve all the challenges that we spoke about today, through that they can have distribution networks that we can solve in that way for them. So it's really flexible from a platform perspective. From an ambitions perspective, okay, we're pretty clear we want to be the global leading digital advice partner for institutions. That's no different in the UK. First up is doing a great job for M&G. We've put in place teams in London and Edinburgh in the first few months of this year, and we're about to hire probably another 15 team members in the UK region over the next 3 to 4 months as well. So really hopeful and positive about the market and what's going on. We think it's leading the globe at the moment in digital advice at the moment, and hugely positive.
I think it presents an interesting challenge for us all, Terry, which is, you know, as companies like yourself work with companies like us, our challenge is how we help the smaller financial advisors in the marketplace get access to technology. And whether that comes through companies like M&G Wealth using our platform to help offer technology or whatever, you see Royal London with an acquisition of Wealth Wizards looking at how they can use that technology to help advisors. And I think that's a great ambition for us all to have, which is to try and find a way when they've got the scale and the capital to test out and deliver technology, but then make it useful to as many clients and advisors as we can. I'm not sure I've thought through quite how we do that yet, but it's definitely an ambition for us. Where it gets complex is that clearly the work we're doing with Ignition uses our advice rules to create our journeys. And that's why it's a bit complex, because you don't want to be giving our advice was for somebody else to have to use. But there's certainly going to be a model in the long term where this tech can get much more democratically distributed by using institutions you work with to do that, I think, with partner advisors.
I think so. I think that has to be one of the ultimate ambitions of this. And we work with Bank of Ireland Group over here in Ireland, and they have that model. They have a manufacturing part of the business under New Ireland Assurance, and that does distribute to IFAs and corporate brokers and so forth. And that is the model that they're looking at, that Richard is considering at the moment, that it is how you get, because in and of itself, the capital expenditure to put a solution like this in place is beyond a 5 or 10 or 20 man firm. There's no way around that one. So how do we over time democratize it, create the scale that actually brings the cost efficiencies to enable smaller practices get a hold of true perhaps partners like M&G?
Sam, do you think that's a model that we're likely to see emerge?
I think it's a really interesting idea, and I think it has potential to do significant good across the sort of the advice gap in the UK. And I know that Terry and the team are doing some great work to provide configurability dashboards so that advice firms are able to refine the rules and create their own rules with relative ease without technical specialisms within the business. So there's some brilliant stuff being done. And yeah, I can certainly see that it's a model that we'll adopt in the future.
Well, sounds interesting. And it's going to be exciting to see what emerges both at M&G and in the wider industry. Thanks very much to Richard, Terry and Sam. And thank you very much for listening. And tune in again next week for the next edition of the FT Advisor podcast.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.